Welcome to the Huvane Wealth Management Conversation. Please enjoy our discussion on sustainable education and environmental advocacy with Susie Amos Cameron alongside Managing Director and Wealth Advisor Tom Huvane. Many of you know Susie as an actress who's featured in over 25 films like Fandango, Unusual Suspects, and Titanic. Susie has founded the New Schools in California, which is the first school to be fully sustainable and to serve a plant-based lunch program. As an author, Susie wrote the OMD plan to encourage switching one meal a day to plant-based. Not only is this helping each and every person's health, but also creating a better earth. Hosting our call today is Managing Director and Wealth Advisor, Tom Huvane. Tom has over 30 years of experience offering advice tailored to clients' needs and goals. Tom has been ranked in Forbes, Barron's, Irish America, and WAG Magazine as a top advisor. Please sit back and enjoy our conversation.
So, you know, Susie, back in 2019, I watched The Game Changers, which you were an executive producer of, which was a very powerful Netflix documentary on world athletes who had successfully adopted a plant-based regimen. And I remember there was a line by a world-renowned powerlifter who had said someone had asked him, how could you be as strong as an ox without eating any meat? And he replied, have you ever seen an ox eating meat? So that film really got me personally to really rethink animal protein. So, Susie, what started you on this plant-based journey? Was it a gradual? Was there an aha moment that inspired you? Love to hear that story.
Yeah, well, there definitely was an aha moment. A friend of mine had been telling me about this this DVD, this documentary called Forks Over Knives, and being the learning junkie that I am, typically if somebody talks to me about, you know, a movie or a book, I get it, but I don't typically get to them right away. So it had been sitting on my shelf for a good 9 months, and I grabbed it one day, and I said, fine, okay, I'll watch the Forks Over Knives, because my friend Elliot has been saying over and over, you got to watch Forks Over Knives. He's from the Bronx. Anyway, I grabbed it and I went down to the gym and I put it in the DVD player and jumped on the treadmill. And 10 minutes later, I just had to get off the treadmill. And I sat down completely gutted. I grew up in Oklahoma. We had cows and pigs and we ate them. And my mother was always telling us to drink our milk, and we needed it for our strong bones, and we needed meat to be healthy and fit. And what I was watching on Forks Over Knives was exactly the antithesis of that, and that we had been advertised to our whole lives that we needed meat and dairy to be healthy. And we had already, you know, I had cancer and diabetes and heart disease on my side of the family. Jim did on his side of the family. And he was already having doctors tell him, even just prophylactically, to start taking medications. And I was like, no, there's got to be an answer. So when I watched the movie, I was like, this is the answer. I went up to the house. I found Jim and I said, hey, I need 90 minutes of your time tomorrow. And he said, well, okay, where are we going? And I said, no, we're not going to go anywhere. We're going to sit down and watch a movie. And he said, okay, great. I love movies. What are we going to watch? And I said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, I'm not going to tell you, but I just want to watch it with you, and then let's have a conversation. We sat down. We watched it. When it finished, we walked from the TV room into the kitchen. He turned to me, and he said, we shouldn't have any more animal products in the house. And overnight, 24 hours later, the pantries were cleaned out. The kitchen was cleaned out. And you know, that's when we got up on our soapbox and started, you know, singing the gospel about, you know, how great plant-based eating was. And, you know, immediately people would see us coming and turn around and run the other way. Because we were just like born again vegans, really. And, but there's only a very small portion of the population that, you know, kind of does it that quickly. And so I know we're going to talk about about OMD, but that was another aha moment of like, oh, you can actually dip your toe in and try this in a different way. It doesn't have to be overnight.
Yes, yes.
So,
yeah. And I think, you know, similar to myself, I think I would probably not be in the camp of having gone 100% in one direction or the other, but certainly felt that after thinking about it and viewing, you know, the films and the documentaries and doing some of my own research, it was something that I wanted to just do very gradual. And what I really like about the OMD plan and then the book you wrote is that it's really such a simple idea to execute. But what does one meal a day mean to the planet? And what do you say to folks, especially, you know, many here on the East Coast in New York, who roll their eyes and say, hey, this is just another kind of quirky diet? What do you say to folks like that?
Well, I don't think of being plant-based as a diet. I think of it as a lifestyle, number one.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of OMD, it stands for one meal a day, which is about swapping out one of your meals a day to a plant-based meal. And just a statistic, one person swapping one of their meals a day to a plant-based meal for 1 year saves 200,000 gallons of water and the carbon equivalent
Wow.
of driving from Los Angeles to New York. So just the environmental savings alone is enough. But when I wrote the book, and I went out, you know, on my book tour, I was armed like you can't believe, because the second you walk into an audience, whether it's 30, whether it's 5,000, whether it's 10,000, and you want to start talking to them about food that they're eating, you will immediately get a lot of crossed arms and crossed legs and scowls on their faces.
Sure.
Of saying, you know, don't talk to me about what I'm eating and don't take away my burger. It's sensitive and it's tradition and it's culture and it's comfort. You know, there's so many things involved with food. But when I start talking about OMD, saying, no, you don't have to, it's just one of your meals a day. You just have
right.
to change one of them. And all of a sudden, I just saw people relaxing. And it's this simple, elegant solution of, you know, just dipping your toe in and just trying. And what I have found is that people try one and they realize that it makes them feel better. They don't have that mid-morning dip or that afternoon dip. There's no food coma.
Yep.
Snoring slows down. And, you know, you saw Game Changers. You know, the more plant-based you are, the more it's helping your sex life, too. So
sure.
that's another thing that people are always like, really? Tell me about that.
Right.
And it is. They talk about it in the film, but what people don't realize is that erectile dysfunction is actually the canary in the coal mine for heart disease. So men go to their urologist and say, hey, man, I'm having a problem. Urologist
right.
gives them a little blue pill, but they should be telling them to run to their cardiologist, because men over 40 who, you know, are experiencing erectile dysfunction, 80% of them will have a cardiac event within 3 to 5 years. So
yeah.
it's actually a very serious thing. You know, you can, it's kind of the spoonful of sugar, because it's, you know, if you see Game Changers, I mean, the way it was presented is it's quite entertaining and fun, but it's actually
wow.
quite serious.
Yes.
Yeah. So it ticks a lot of different boxes, you know, whether you're doing it for the environment or the animals or your waistline, or your, you know,
libido.
Your sex life, you know, or to be fit. And then, you know, there are other ones now that I think we're all living in, and that has to do with pandemics. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I would say 80% of diseases out in the world are caused by the exploitation of animals. And we're also talking about superbugs, and all of those things are based on, you know, how we're exploiting animals and, you know, growing beautiful grains and foods to feed the animals to feed to humans, and it's making humans sick, and it's making our planet sick.
Yeah, there just seems to be so many benefits. And I do like the idea of starting out slowly. And then, you know, I do think that, you know, for myself, I can speak for myself, is that, you know, as I incorporated one meal a day, then it became, oh, let's try two meals. You know, then it became, let's try several meals in a row. And so it's not a factor of giving up meat or not going to, you know, those great barbecues in the summer. But it's just really about thinking about what you're putting in your body. And there are so many other great alternatives.
Exactly, exactly. And you, by the way, you can still have a vegan barbecue. They're pretty darn yummy. I have a question for you that I'm curious about.
Sure.
So I'm as a UBS ambassador, I know that the firm has spent decades doing research on both plant-based and socially responsible investing. And I'm curious to hear how you think about the environment from a financial perspective.
Sure. That's a great question. Also, it's actually a very timely question. In fact, a new report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just came out literally in the last month, expressed in stark language a very urgent need for addressing global warming. And despite the discouraging tone of the report, it does present possibilities for mitigating some of the most severe scenarios that they see. We see various ways here at UBS in which investors can align their portfolio with the aim of combating climate change. You know, for example, we've been discussing today, a range of companies are seeking to lower the climate impact of food production. The OECD estimates that land use is the second largest source of emissions globally, behind the energy sector. And a host of companies are working to make food systems more sustainable, from developing smart agriculture to producing lower impact alternatives to meat. In the transport sector, the trend towards smart mobility is really gathering pace. Technological advances are leading every single day to greater electrification of cars. We're seeing that every day in autonomous driving, which folks are now starting to make as part of their daily routine. We also see opportunities across the whole value chain, from batteries and electric components to car sharing concepts. So while the challenge is really, it's really a great challenge, we really see a wide range of ways in which investors can play a part in helping to stem global warming. And it's something that at UBS we've been very highly focused on, you know, not just recently, but that we've been focused on over the last 20 to 25 years. So working on climate change, working on the UN's projects has really been something that's not new to UBS. And when we started doing this over 20 years ago, folks didn't really feel that they wanted to invest in green type products. But especially now with COVID having emerged in the last year or two, folks are really now starting to see that green can really make them green. So it's really opening up their eyes from an investment perspective as well. So thank you for that question. So Susie, let's turn to education, and specifically the Muse schools that you founded. Tell us about the schools and what was involved in starting them. How did you begin?
It really had to do with, it was completely selfish in the beginning because our three younger children, we had watched our two older children go through different schooling systems and just watched their spirits being squashed. They were fed yucky food at school. They weren't being taught about the environment. They weren't being taught about self-efficacy, just taking care of their own psychological needs and wants. And so I just decided to start this. It was going to be a very teeny tiny little bitty school in our guest house. We started with, in the end, we did find a little location, and we started with 11 children in the fall of 2006. And And right before we all locked down for COVID, we were on two campuses with 225 kids. Ranging from 2 years old all the way through 18. And what has happened since, and we were, you know, COVID has, you know, kind of upended everything on so many levels. And it's created a lot of really amazing opportunities and silver linings. So we were on our path to opening schools, quite a few of them around the world under the Muse Global umbrella. And because of COVID, you know, people were like, well, we're not going to in-person schools at the moment. So we were, you know, talking about pivoting very quickly to virtual. What we had been doing for over 10 years was we had a program called Traveling Muse, which was also created for our family initially because we were traveling back and forth to New Zealand, you know, for, hanging out here for many months during the school year. And so we created Virtual Muse. So when we closed the school down for a lockdown on a Thursday afternoon, we opened up Monday morning with a very, very robust program. And I would say within a month or two, you know, I started seeing articles about how, you know, challenging virtual learning was, and the kids hated it, and the parents hated it, and the teachers hated it. We looked within our community and were experiencing exactly the opposite. Children were happy. Parents were happy. Teachers were happy because we had been doing it for so many years already and incorporating all of our five pillars and our sustainability and our self-efficacy and our passion-based learning. So what's happened since then is, you know, we're just now really starting to reignite, I should say, the in-person, the brick-and-mortar schools. We are, you know, actively looking for investors and partners in the Muse Global world.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to start a school in their country, give me a call.
Yes, we got franchise opportunities here.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think about starting the school, you know, it's a concept, you know, as it's plant-based, you're teaching the children about the environment and being environmentally responsible. How do you get the parents to buy into that concept? And what's been the impact to students so far?
Initially we were not a plant-based school because we weren't, but we were serving all, you know, free-range chicken and grass-fed beef and organic dairy and, you know, all of that. We have a very, very hearty seed-to-table program. So the children were growing probably up to 70-80% of all the produce that they were eating, depending on what time of year it was. So they were learning about planting and growing and harvesting and preparing and composting. So really learning that whole circle. And when we did go plant-based and, you know, when I started learning about all the environmental issues of animal agriculture, which is the, you know, animal agriculture is the second leading cause of greenhouse gases and climate change more than all transportation combined. So, I kind of looked at my sister who had helped me found the school, and I said, we can't be calling ourselves an environmental school and still be serving animal products. So we actually took 18 months and educated everyone, brought in speakers, chefs, authors, climate scientists, doctors, and fall of 2015, we put our stake in the ground, no pun intended, but we made the announcement that we were the first plant-based school in North America and promptly lost 50% of our kids.
Wow.
Just like that. So I looked at my sister and I said, well, I think we just killed a school, but at least we did it for a good reason. but what ended up happening from there is we quickly regained our enrollment and surpassed it within, I don't know, it was like 3 months.
Wow.
And we started getting populated with people that really got it and understood. People were traveling. They were moving from other places in the United States. We even had a couple of families move from Europe to be near the school, to send their children to the school because of the plant-based, environmental, social, self-efficacy and all of that. So it's the children, in the end, having, you know, educating them on it, they were taking it back to their parents. We started getting calls about, you know, do you have any recipes? How do I compost? How do I build raised beds? I mean, it really became a very, very thick glue to our Muse community. And, you know, and now we're able to even continue to do all of those things virtually. All of our teachers are actually still on site. We've kind of created a Mr. Rogers, as it were, kind of a platform. So they're all teaching from their classrooms.
Sure.
Even though the kids are at home. So so we're doing cooking classes. We're doing Feed the Table. We're doing all of those, you know, extracurricular things that we were doing along with the core academics and the culminations and passion projects.
Right. Wow. That's just so great. I spent a lot of time in education myself, working with a private school here in New York, the high school level, and I know it takes a village, you know, to really not only operate and organize an education facility, but to do it in a specific way like you're doing, it's a lot of work and a lot of time, and, you know, you make mistakes and you make changes and you move on and you get better, and it really feels like you're getting the children at a very young age where this is where they're starting to form their habits. And by doing that, you can see, you know, within 10, 15, 20 years, you can start to see the next generation of young people just continue that trend. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say probably 90% of the kids that are going, you know, that are graduating are going into, you know, some kind of environmental studies, health studies, you know, things that will help the world at large.
Wow. Well, Susie, we're getting to the end of our conversation, and I appreciate your time. Is there an overall message that you'd like to leave with us today, in particular, the next generation of our clients? Who we focus quite a bit of attention on as well, about the responsibility we all have to the environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thing, and it always, for me, you know, since I wrote on, it always comes back to that, a simple, elegant solution. Every single time you put food on your plate, you're either going to be hurting the environment and your health and the animals, or you're going to be helping the environment and your health and the animals. So the more you put plant-based food on your plate, even if it's just once a day, you will be making a huge impact. And, you know, that's a really, really empowering thing for the individual. For the individual that can't afford an electric car, they can't afford to put solar on their houses, or, you know, they live in an apartment or something like that. It is something that a 10-year-old can do. It's something that a 90-year-old can do, is changing what they're putting on their plate, and the impacts are enormous. So go out, seize the day, and do OMB.
So our choices have consequences. Our choices are all within our own control. So that's a great message, and that is just so inspiring, not only for our clients, but for our next generation of clients. So I've really enjoyed this conversation today. I have to tell you, I really love your message. I don't know if I'm 100% on board
all the way, but I've certainly made some changes in my own life, and they've been very, very helpful especially plant-based. And, you know, once I start educating myself on it, which I encourage folks to do, I think they'll start to see the you know, the light here. My wife jokes around with me. We have a lot of Beyond Meat burgers in our freezer, and she's pushing me to free up the room for them. So this has really been a really insightful conversation today. And we like to end these conversations, Susie, on a little bit of a lighter note, I guess we would say. And I know you've had an exciting career and family life, and you and your husband have traveled all over the world, meeting all sorts of exceptional people. Is there a particular experience or interesting story that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, to tell you the truth, I have two that have popped to mind. And
okay,
one of them
we can do
has
two.
To do with, one of them has to do with, there have been, I don't get starstruck very easily. And there have been two mm-hmm. times in my life when I got completely so starstruck I couldn't speak. And I can feel my heart pounding right now. And one of those times was I was at at an event, and I was probably 4 years into my acting career, and I was with a friend of mine who happened to be a producer, and he was standing next to me, and he said, "Oh, I want to introduce you to somebody." And I turned around, and I looked up at this man that was so tall, and his shoulders were probably as wide as he was tall, and it was Sean Connery. And I couldn't speak. I just couldn't speak. And anyway, that was like a big aha moment.
Wow.
And then we had a testimonial from a family from Muse. And this is where, you know, starting with children so young.
Mm-hmm.
But inevitably, if you take a toddler into a grocery store, something's going to happen. And so this woman took her little four-year-old into the grocery store. And in the middle of it, she stopped and she planted her feet and she started screaming at the top of her lungs, "But mommy, you promised me tofu." Because she had been eating tofu at the school. From the plant food. So, and we had another little boy who one night for dinner would only eat radishes. Because he'd been burning radishes.
Some good roughage there in that young man.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, there's always a debate I hear about whether Sean Connery was really, you know, the real James Bond and who was the best James Bond. And I see all these rankings out there. So I have a feeling I know where he ranks in your book.
Oh, yeah. I was just, I literally couldn't speak. I was like.
Yeah. And he just passed recently. It was recent, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I think it's recently. I think he, you know, we heard that. So, but yeah, we always see him as number one James Bond. So that's a great story. So, well, again, thank you, Susie. You know, I really want to thank you for sharing your time and your tremendous insights with us today. I know that our clients are really going to get a lot out of this conversation, a lot of new stuff as well that won't be familiar to them.
Thank you for listening to our conversation. At Huvane Wealth Management, our mission is to build today for a better and brighter future. Tune in next session where we interview Chairman and Ambassador Mark Gilbert, who will tell us what it's like to spend the weekend with Pete Rose. Until then, please enjoy our other conversations available on Spotify and on our website, both entitled Huvane Wealth Management Conversations.